Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. Glad to have you with us again this week at The Rad Life. And as promised, we continue to be age explorers, charting uncharted territory, going where... No, I'm not going to give it away just yet.
I'm ready to hit the music whenever you say it.
We have an interesting show for you guys today. It's
got to keep you on the mic, though. We're scratching his foot here.
Well, Paul's giving me power tools next to my chair. I don't know exactly if we have props. I thought camera first and then props. Paul.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But we've got two. Okay, serious.
Let's focus.
Focus. Do not have coffee before the air show, Rod. Okay.
So you have to understand, Rod comes walking in about 2 minutes before the show, and he says, "We got some great ideas. We want this music. We want this stuff. We got this flashlight. We're just racing all around trying to get all this stuff up in here." And he just like, and now he's too relaxed.
So for everybody, I think this is a revelation for Paul here the first time. But for everybody who knows me, can you just text Paul and tell him, yep, that's right.
That's right. That's the Rad Life. I got to get used to the Rad Life.
That's the Rad Life. So this week, these two gentlemen sitting in the room are just staring at me like, okay, well, now what? But this week,
we're going to get up and leave in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. We lock the door. We have two gentlemen with us, and we're going to do something kind of different. I have always been...
You do something different? I can't believe it.
Oh, God. Peanut gallery. Where's that glass wall when I need it? I've always been, and I'm sure a lot of people have, I've always been fascinated by, we all want to leave a small carbon footprint. We all want to be basically environmentally conscious until it gets to be inconvenient, and then we don't want to do it. But, you know, the bottom line is everybody has a sense of wanting to leave the planet in a state that is better or at least the same as we found it, that, you know, there's a sort of a sustainability, I'll use the generic word here, which is really the whole show here. It's we keep hearing the word sustainability thrown around everywhere. It's almost like with the word green, you know. After a while, it becomes like Coca-Cola.
Can we sustain a whole show on sustainability?
Yes, we are about to try to sustain a whole show on sustainability.
Okay.
Okay. And really, what is sustainability? I mean, what really does sustainability mean?
I really don't know.
Exactly.
I think I do, but it's so generic. It's become one of those catchphrases that everybody uses. I'm not sure anymore what it means.
Well, I mean, I was talking the gentleman. Let me introduce the gentleman here in the room. Robert, what is it?
Mejia.
No. Robert Mejia. Yeah. No,
what is it? My good friend.
I was going to say Mejia, but Robert Mejia, very interesting name and a cool spelling. From EtherWorks Media.
And EtherWorks.
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
See, not only are we sustainable, but we're pulling it out of the ether.
The ether. I love that.
Okay. And,
you know, the Greeks thought there were only four elements of life: earth, wind, and fire, and ether.
So we've got one of them in the room today.
That's right.
That's good. We can capture the rest later. and the other gentleman that's a guest on our show today is Greg Mihalik. See, I got that one right. he is from the Aerospace Corporation.
There is an aerospace corporation.
Why did I just flash on like Men in Black there for a
minute? I don't know. We're going to get helicopters flying, black helicopters flying around.
It's a very generic name. It's like the grocery store or the gas station.
Yeah, right.
The bank. Except
it's called the Aerospace Corporation. It's been around for about 50 years.
So there you go. So it's actually not housed in a little, Hoover Dam power plant or something with people in black suits.
Hoover Dam power plant.
But okay, so and this is going to be uncharted territory, really. We're going to go on a journey today, okay? And I want to start with Robert, and we do this every show. We ask people how they found themselves doing what they are doing, what we're about to talk to, right, about here. So I'll start with you, Robert. Can you give us a little background about yourself and then guide us to what is sustainability?
Okay, sure. Well, and thanks for having me on. Yeah, basically, for me, it began in a real way back in late 2007. The organization that I worked for is a public organization, and so One of the things that we're always doing is chasing funding. And I came across some information on the internet about a new piece of legislation that had just been signed by then President Bush, mm-hmm. called the Green Jobs Act. And so I kind of spoke to my boss and said, this looks like something that may have some funding attached to us, attached to it for us. In terms of workforce development programming, why don't we start taking a look at this and maybe work with some of our counterparts mm-hmm. In Los Angeles County to kind of get a head start on this and really get it figured out. And because regionalism and regional projects are also or have been in vogue and certainly are in vogue today in government, it made sense to work with our counterparts in the area. Again, to see how we could really understand the issue better and tackle it.
And what company was this again?
It was the South Bay Workforce Investment Board at the time.
Okay.
Well, and I mean, the idea of environmental consciousness or environmental sensitivity is nothing necessarily new. But it seems like in the last, I would say, decade maybe, there has just been almost like the combination of perfect reasoning, economic maybe pressures, resource depletion, that has made this thing seemingly more streamlined, more mainstream, I should say, as a topic of discussion. But again, even with all of that, it seems like the efforts are fragmented. They're not really focused towards a common goal, so to speak. And I think part of it is, like in my case, I'll be the first to admit, there's a difficulty in understanding what it is. Now, when I asked you, you said actually there is a definition for sustainability, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Which is?
Well, I guess the most popular, or at least one of the most popular, and the one that I kind of go back to when I try to really understand, when I've heard like about a couple hundred different variations or definitions of green and sustainability, I kind of go back to the Brundtland Commission's definition, which is sustainable development being development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
And there are a lot of variations on that theme, and I think almost in terms of things being generic, in a lot of ways, when you have a really extremely diverse society that you live in, mm-hmm. you need multiple definitions.
So read that one again. Give it to us one more time here.
Sure. Sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations.
So that would work for sustainable agriculture as well, where you're trying to not burn the soil out and ruin the soil by growing one crop over and over and over again, for example.
Well, you could argue that it applies to even as simple as the word development was thrown out as development. Mm-hmm. If you're going to develop something and that basically then takes away a resource or let's say a surf spot, we're in Orange County, a surf spot or some natural habitat or something
right.
of that nature,
sacrifices something,
sacrifices that for the now result. So is there, I'm curious, it's just coming to me, Robert, is there a timeline, like when you measure without a negative impact or denying future generations something, is there a benchmark? Is it open-ended? Is it a 10-year period that I'm supposed to evaluate what the impact of my actions would be and whether they fit the sustainable definition or not? Is there such a thing or is it pretty much open-ended?
I would say it's open end.
Okay, I had a reason for asking the question. Again, Paul knows this by now. A lot of people mm-hmm. know me. I don't usually ask a question unless I kind of have a feeling of the answer, because I don't want to surprise myself. But no, the thing about it is, I would think that it's the very best. Even if you consider I should look 10 years ahead, tomorrow it will be 10 years plus that one day. So it's never there's never a benchmark that's going to be reached as far as the impact of what I do today, and whether it has an adverse or positive impact down the road. So open ended is perfectly what I thought you were going to say, but I think that makes it really difficult for people that don't have, say, a bigger picture perspective. And let's face it, we are a society that basically measures results by what the quarterly report on sales is,
or the daily stock price.
Or the daily stock price. We don't really think like a lot of other countries, for example, that maybe have been faced by either geographical limitations or resource limitations. older countries, if you will, and maybe in Europe, where the concept of sustainability and multi-generational benefiting from sustainable philosophy is what they live, because they're there before us. We're still looking at, you know, well, there's all those resources in Alaska that we can tap into, or maybe...
And let's plow it all under and rebuild it again here. It doesn't matter if it's 50 years old or 100 years old or whatever. We don't seem to have a sense of history about a lot of development.
Yeah, so I personally appreciate that very much. I think it's important to stop and say, you know, there isn't a timeline. You're not going to basically do a report and say, well, within the next 5 years, the results of what we do today will have not happened yet, you know, and at year seven, I won't be there because I would have sold whatever it is that I did and been moved on, and then somebody else is basically saddled with the problem of the consequences of my actions. So I appreciate that definition. And can you tell me who is – you quoted a commission.
Mm-hmm.
What was that commission? Was that a federal task force? What was the
– Yeah. Actually, it was the World Commission on Environment and Development that was established by the United Nations in 1983, and it lived for about 4 years. And the head of that commission was Gro Harlem Brundtland. And so that the
name of the commission.
The commission, hence the name of the commission. And the primary purpose of that commission was to come together and talk to people around the world about what some of the most pressing social and environmental issues were in their parts of the world and figure out solutions and different kinds of ways that the varying nations on our in our planet can come together and solve them.
Can I ask a question about, I'm sure. Sorry to butt in here, but we did a show on this on another different show, but a different topic on this. And the idea was that suddenly the developed nations are telling the undeveloped nations, you know, we didn't do it when we were developing our resources. We just, you know, cut off the mountaintops to get to the coal. We did anything we could to industrialize and build up. And we created smog and pollution and horrible environment. And we learned from it. So now we want you guys to do it differently. And they're looking at us saying, man, we're going to do it the same way you did it. You know, we're going to get to the resources as quick as we can, and we'll worry about the results later. Why should we be different than you? How do you preach to us?
Which is really perfect, Paul, because, you know, I was going to ask, you know, why? I mean, like, why is sustainability or sustainable behavior important?
Yeah. Well, I would just respond quickly to the first comment. You know, as many countries have done and will continue to do for the foreseeable future, as they look to research and development that's done here in the U.S., whether it's done in the traditional private sector or if it's done by the military, et cetera, you know, United States is a leader in development of patents and technologies in a variety of areas. So the benefit and beauty of that for developing countries is they can learn from our examples and kind of leapfrog over old, not so efficient ways of doing things to doing things that are more ultimately beneficial for the environment and sustainable for our civilization. Right now, I think if there are arguments, they're probably based on price and accessibility to fossil fuels and everything that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I think the price of renewable energy comes down, and it's come down quite a bit in just the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
Once it reaches parity with the price of fossil fuels, it'll start to make a lot more sense to go with renewables than maybe perhaps fossil fuels.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, Paul, to your point, it's almost like a child, right? It's like the parent always wants to tell the child, "Don't learn from my mistakes."
Do what
don't
I say, them. Not what I did. Right?
See that I was going down the nice path, and you have to be like the rebellious child.
I'm going to go right to it. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, there is sort of a wisdom in not repeating mistakes, and I think some people will heed that warning, and some people will not. I don't know how much enforcement you could do without starting to become, you know, like a global, you know, policing state.
Right.
But I think at least the benefit of the wisdom of having learned the hard way. And you mean, so one of the things I know that you're doing, Robert, and I think you want to talk about who the team of people that were involved is part of your sort of educational component of this. Why sustainability? Why is it important for us to do? Is I think you took a path of almost like a documentary, right?
Mm-hmm. I did, yeah. It's called Green Century, and he was really kind of an extension of some advocacy work that I had done when I was at the South Bay Workforce Investment Board, when I helped our director put together an organization called California's Green Workforce Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'll go ahead and say it, even today, it was the state's largest locally organized public-private partnership for a green workforce and a sustainable future. And, you know, we spent about a year, and again, it initially started as kind of a money chase, but we took about a year to really figure out what the heck green jobs were,
mm-hmm.
and we found that our labor market information systems and the way the federal government and the state, by extension, kind of tracks economic activity was very limited when it came to anything to do with sustainability or green jobs. So we had to spend a year, almost a year, just figuring out where to get good data that we could base decisions on.
Right.
So every meeting that we had, and this is in 2008, every meeting that we had, you know, every time we had the next subsequent meeting, it seemed like the number of people in the room doubled. So there was a lot of interest in
sure.
that, and there was the 08 elections coming up, and
right.
President then, you know, candidate Obama's campaign, you know, part of his platform included green jobs.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of interest in that, and really the throes of the Great Recession were just setting upon us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, green jobs at that time seemed, it was for me a tremendous and wonderful distraction from kind of the misery that was starting to take place in the economy. But it was also something that gave, I thought, a lot of people hope and maybe kept minds off of negative things and more on the possibility of a better and brighter future.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think people, I'm involved with the Historical Society in San Clemente, and I've been for about a decade. And part of the story that's always fascinated me about us being a student of history and so forth is that there are things that are more than just the built environment or the tangible stuff that are documented through these efforts, these common goals that people set out to accomplish, whether it be, you know, industrial successes or innovations and processes or just building a building in a town that's basically been, you know, hammered by the Depression and having people have something that's a beacon of hope sort of being erected in front of them that they can attach their hopes and dreams to, because the psychology of that is super important. And so when we were approaching, and maybe we're in denial, by a lot of people were in denial, I think, of the economic downturn that was coming, is that, you know, talking about the potential of more sustainable way of living and making a living, okay, give people some hope. It gave them a chance to basically think, you know, it's not so bleak that, you know, all I want to do is basically roll up into a ball in the corner and rock, you know, until I myself to sleep.
Right.
So, and a lot of people did that. It's horrible. I think short of the Great Depression, what we just went through was probably something psychologically that have, you know, scarred people, and they will carry it with them. We kind of did it to ourselves to a certain extent, but or somebody did it to us, I should say, and leave, you know.
That's another show.
I will avoid naming names, but so I think it's important, and I know we're going to circle back around and talk about those sustainable mm-hmm. jobs, and I joked with Robert Paul earlier, and I said, so people that are in their boomer years that are maybe being passed over by people that are younger, you know, are looking at sustainable jobs as being a form of sustaining their lives, because mm-hmm. I can maybe have more sustainability in a job that is in a developing, you know, kind of industry, innovative, where my age is not necessarily going to get in the way. My seasoning actually serves me better. So sustainable living through sustainable jobs.
That's interesting. So you think boomers are gravitating towards this more than other generations because it is a way to reinvent themselves and
I don't think. I don't think maybe more than other generations, because I think, you know, also when you have the youth are very in touch with wanting to, you know, be sensitive to the environment, stuff like that. I think the cool thing about it in my mind is that as a boomer, if you're looking at your job prospects, if you're looking at an encore career, this combines potential of livelihood and a salary, or if you're an entrepreneur, that kind of return. But at the same time, you're actually being socially conscious.
Go back to our 60s roots here and save the planet.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And with a large group of people turning into that age bracket, you can almost argue, you know, what is it? Is it the chicken or the egg? Is it the fact that sustainability is now becoming more and more mainstream because more and more people see the connection and want to advocate for it, you know, in an entrepreneurial manner, perhaps, you know, and not just looking for a big government to solve it.
Kind of fits in with your last week's show where you were talking about the one of the topics that came up was the changing travel desires of boomers as they retire.
Right.
And they don't just want to go take a picture postcard of the Eiffel Tower. More and more they want to get involved in a project or go to ecotourism,
right,
and see the gorillas. And
I'm not going to go down to Mexico and set and build maybe housing. Mm-hmm. But I may go down to Mexico and basically volunteer my vacation to build solar panels that would provide electricity to a small village that basically is not on the grid. I mean, there's your sustainability,
right,
as a draw for tourism.
Or the turtle population that comes and lays their eggs every
exactly.
year on the beaches in Mexico. There.
So it's interesting, right? It does dovetail a little bit, part mm-hmm. of that next phase of our journey here. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about this documentary, Robert.
Well, you know, after about almost 4 years of running the Green Workforce Coalition meetings, and, you know, I probably should have done a better job of documenting some of the partnerships and initiatives that came out of those meetings, because they were tremendous. And just about anybody you ask who was a regular mm-hmm. Would tell you that. But I got kind of burnt out because it was really turned into a full-time job on top of a pretty intense
full-time
job.
Yeah.
So I needed to take a step back and decompress a little bit. But, you know, after about 4 or 5 months, I kind of got the itch again, and I said, well, I want to do something. In this case, I want to do something where it's recorded and perhaps could have a larger reach.
Sure.
And so
smart. Yeah.
My brother, who kind of done some work in local media in the Central Valley, you know, suggested that maybe I'd put together a documentary of sorts or a talk show for cable access. So I said, well, that's a good idea. Maybe let's
see what I can do. Now it's called podcasting.
Yeah.
More sustainable that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and it started off conceptually as a kind of a glorified slide or PowerPoint with narration and
Al Gore's famous PowerPoint that turned
right.
into a movie. Right.
Right. Hadn't even thought of that. But, yeah, it's, you know, one thing led to another, and then it turned into a full-on documentary. And so, you know, it's called Green Century, and you know, folks who want to check it out can see it on greencentury.tv. But, you know, it's really about some of the greatest environmental challenges that we face as a civilization, kind of borrow from some of the Science Channel shows and other things that, in terms of styling, and so it's a kind of quasi science fantasy, science fiction styled show, but we don't get too far out there.
And I think we're going to play a part of that. Paul?
Yeah, let's take a break first. We're right up against the hard break here, so when we come back out of the break, let's play some of it, and then you can come back and narrate it and tell us what we're hearing, and we'll bring the other guest in as well here.
That's great. So if you're joining us, we'll be going to a break, but we've got Robert Mejia from Etherwork Media and Greg Mihalik from the Aerospace Corporation with us today.
Trying to do something clever here. There we go.
Paul, what are you doing?
This is supposed to be the Star Trek music here, but it's coming up a little slow here.
You're all for dramatic buildup, aren't you? Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Roberts.
Oh, this is going to take too long.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can end with it, Paul.
I like it.
Right. I was trying to be cute and clever.
Yeah, we're trying to play space.
Dumb,
the final part.
Yeah, sorry.
These are the voyages of the Rod Life. But, so, Robert, before the break, and let me just reintroduce our guest today, Robert Mejia from Etherwork Media and Greg Mihalik from the Aerospace Corporation in El Segundo. And we were about to play a clip, audio clip, from your documentary. And do you want to set it up, or?
Just real quickly, it's a segment from the show on building energy management and why it's important.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So here I'm trying to get up the other Star Trek theme here. So we're going to. All right. Let's set it up. This is from Green Century, the documentary.
Buildings consume 40% of the primary energy produced in the U.S. and 72% of all electricity. This thirst for energy, split almost evenly between the commercial and residential sectors, accounts for about 40% of the CO2 emissions in our country. By itself, space cooling represents 13% of the primary energy consumed in buildings and building-related CO2 emissions. This amounts to about 5% of our primary energy consumption and 5% of related emissions of carbon dioxide.
We should manage energy properly because through proper energy management, we will achieve economic benefits. For companies, it will increase their profitability, their competitiveness, and their productivity. For individuals, it will increase their quality of life. The first step in building energy management is to become energy efficient. Second, you have to prepare for those times when the grid cannot handle the load called demand response. Then you add renewables. We have to view energy management as a low-risk investment. When companies invest in energy efficiency and save $1, they will see $1 or more added to their bottom line.
Between 2006 and 2030, our population is expected to increase by 21%. The number of households will increase by 25% in the same period. In that 24-year span, U.S. commercial building space is projected to grow by 35%. But between 2010 and 2030, building floor space is expected to grow at 8.5% annually in India and 3.5% each year in China. This will contribute to significant increases in energy demand by the building sector worldwide.
Okay, some startling statistics.
Yeah, so and also it also reminds us that this is not something that's limited to the United States, that this is a global initiative, global benefit, global effort.
Well, that's why I asked the earlier question, because what everything I read, it says that the developing world is pushing a green, sustainable, or the developed countries are trying to push an agenda, and a lot of the developing countries, like India, have not been eager, and China, to adapt the Kyoto protocols and all these other efforts to limit greenhouse gases and other things, because they think it'll put a cap on their growth.
Well, right, and again, you know, why are you telling us to do something you guys didn't do?
Exactly.
And you should be the smarter person. You should have figured it out before,
right?
And we didn't. So now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that a little bit, Robert. How has the documentary been received? Have you had a lot of interest in it? Have you had a lot of people kind of follow up and want more information?
And is it in this country or other countries? I mean, is it a different response when you go to India?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much a domestic production right now. But we've had it air in Albuquerque, Denver, and New Mexico. Well, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Denver, Philadelphia, Long Beach, at Foothills Media in Monrovia. And, you know, the feedback we've gotten from each of those stations has been very positive. People are basically waiting to see when the next installment's coming out.
Okay. So, we've talked about why. We've talked about sort of the, not necessarily the hypothetical, but sort of the overlying philosophy of why. And we've talked, kind of touched a little bit on jobs, right? And I think we can lead with the space conversation with Greg, or we can follow it up from the jobs, because I think, you know, what's the point of saving the human race? I'm not trying.
What's
I'm not
wrong with the human
okay,
race.
Okay, I mean, why?
Why Mount start over?
Why should I bother? Right? Why shouldn't there be sort of a cleansing, if you will, of just some, you know,
wow.
meteor hitting?
Wow!
Hey, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. We spend so much energy.
We're just dinosaurs. Get rid of us and let the next species take over.
You know what, Paul? We spend so much energy. excuse the pun, but we spend so much energy talking about sustainability. Talking about what we should do that is right versus wrong to the planet, right? And granted, it's because of future generations. But all the time, we're basically populated the planet with more and more people, right? It's like a building with a certain number of bedrooms in it. At some point, you're either doubling up or tripling up, or you got to build another building, right? So why are we being sustainable? What's the point?
Well, if I could just kind of respond to that for a minute.
You can go ahead and slap him, too, if you want.
none of that. That wouldn't be sustainable.
That's what my mom said.
But we are already seeing losses of biodiversity and species extinction in habitats around the globe. It's caused by ecosystem destruction, commercial hunting, and other kinds of human activities. In the not-too-distant future, we're going to see marked sea level rise caused by melting sea and landed ice, and as a result, millions, maybe even tens of millions.
Some people would say we already have that with all the unusual flooding that happens.
Absolutely. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
And can you imagine if it went up just, say, a couple of inches, 6 inches or whatever, what that would do to all the coastal homes, all the millions and millions of million-dollar homes up and down the coast of the East Coast and the Gulf Coast and the California coast and around the world and island communities that would be half of their development is right along the shoreline there and all get wiped out in Hawaii and other places.
Well, we do it every day in Orange County. We do it every day on the coast of California when we don't look at what something upstream, if you will,
right,
development-wise, does to sediment and things of that nature.
You build a pier, and then it eats away at the right behind it.
Simply to our, it's sort of one of those, I don't think it happens as often, but unfortunately I think it still happens every once in a blue moon. But, you know, all these washes, all these coastal canyons that led down natural estuaries to drop all this deposit, all this sediment that made our beaches, mm-hmm, right, that gets concreted in.
Yes.
Gets blocked.
That's why there's a move to unconcrete the L.A. River and to try and turn it back into a natural flowing stream and not just a giant sewer pipe.
Well, but then I can't drive my car in there, Paul.
No, you can't. You can't recreate the scene from Grease or whatever.
And every other movie that went after.
Exactly.
Right? There's innovative sustainability right there. Right? Come up with better ideas, people. Okay. But, yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. And I think, in doing things, even in unconcreting the river, Paul, you could argue that those are sustainable jobs. Those are jobs dealing with sustainability. If I go in there and actually correct things that were not done right.
Yeah, we're trying to undo the damage, and we're trying to prevent future damage, it seems like. That's another way to put it. Sustainability is we did a lot of this stuff without thinking about what the impact would be. We did it for some immediate – we concreted the rivers so that we could control the floods.
We're in doing that, we are actually providing jobs. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be the jobs of that nature. I don't know if the same premise applies, Robert, but, you know, when it comes to historical preservation, for example, people go, well, yeah, we'll just build new construction versus, like, let's restore another building and repurpose it.
Right.
The thing about restoring another building and repurposes it, it actually requires a different skill level that is either learned through that project of mm-hmm. doing and therefore can be replicated. So it's a skill set that we are basically educating people and giving an opportunity to do. It also undoes the damage. In the case of historical buildings, we don't tear that down, put it in the dump.
Right.
It's actually standing, and basically we have saved the earth from actually having to absorb more debris.
We reuse stuff. Right.
Right.
We learn to reuse stuff. But we live in a throwaway society.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you don't change your car every 3 years, then there's something wrong with you. You need to have your mind checked, right?
Yeah,
you don't
right.
need, yeah. So
you throw away your toaster now rather than getting it fixed. You know, there's no handyman to fix the
toaster.
We
live a life that is not based on the principles of sustainability.
No. Based on consumption, constant consumption.
That's right. Very true.
In fact, we're encouraged to do that because the premise is if we're not out there spending for things that we shouldn't be spending money on, the economy will falter. And yet the thinking is if we go back and undo some of the stuff that we have done, we would be not only providing economic engines, but we're also be uplifting the level of skill. And as usually has happened in this country, is if you have that skill development happening here to correcting our stuff, when other countries are actually that are sort of behind, if you will, the curve where we're at now, right now, in 10 years we're exporting that expertise to those countries.
Absolutely. We're teaching them how to do it right. So I want to hear how the aerospace company fits into all
of
this here.
Well, because if we're sustainable and we're on this planet and we're going to at some point need to
Leave.
Greg, take us.
Leave.
No, lock the door. You can't leave. We're just
Rod, you brought it up as well as the clip from the documentary about the world's population increasing. And, yeah. You know, that's not going to stop. And
no.
So the rate of consumption of resources is only going to be reduced. It will never stop or be sustained, right? So we're always going to be consuming resources from the planet, no matter how many people are here.
Absolutely. Efficiently and or otherwise. But
Or otherwise, right. So, you know, so there is going to come a point, you know, and I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of years that, you know, the sustainable resources will just be unavailable.
Right.
You know, we will have mined all the titanium that we can do with whatever technology we have at that time.
Right.
And that's kind of something critical that we haven't talked about really is the technology aspect of this. You know, we talked about just a few minutes ago the disposable societies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, the fact that technology has a significant amount to play in that, in the fact that, you know, we can now mass produce toasters, for example, at like $2 a pop, you know, where before in the 1950s they were pretty expensive to produce. There was hand labor involved, and
sure.
Now it's all automated. So
right.
The advent of technology has, you know, led to that ability to be a disposable society.
Right.
It's
cheaper to toss than it is to replace.
Exactly.
Well, we've
exactly.
also disposed of
right.
people, right?
Yeah.
And in the process of being, of getting there, we've also cut down the number of people. You got one supervisor making sure that the switch is on for that whole room of machines that are making toasters.
Yeah, right.
Versus people who are assembling them by hand.
Right.
So we have to reinvent ourselves in terms of what do we do with these increasing number of people that are on
yeah.
the planet that we have less things for them to do. Given the current way technology is developing,
ship them to Mars.
Right, and that's another option is find someplace else to live. However,
you're jumping the gun, Paul.
The philosophy has to be taken with those people that we cannot, you know, that the sustainability philosophy has to be taken with the people that do leave the planet eventually.
Right,
is that you know we can't go to Mars and
do exactly the same thing we did.
Right. However, the resources there are significantly limited.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of technology to try to you know make rocket fuel out of the air and make rocket fuel out of even the moon soil,
right?
Yeah,
right for bases there, but ultimately it comes down to power and energy. You know, as the gentleman in that was like a perfect clip to play
yeah.
from your documentary about energy management. Is first you have to do it efficiently, as that gentleman said, and that's you know the energy efficient energy production is one of the things that you know the renewable sources like solar and wind claim that they can you know that they can do from that standpoint. It's getting that efficiency to scale up to mass use. Of millions of people, right? I mean, yeah, there's you know, windmills and palms.
Like
palm springs
Arnold
and,
wanted to put solar panels on so many homes, and that
right.
never came to pass here.
Right, right. And we just had a guy come to our house the other day and knock on our door for solar panels. We're like,
right.
well, you know, we don't spend that much to where it would be beneficial
Practical,
for us,
yeah.
right? But the point being is that you know, there's to scale up the efficiency of which these renewable sources can actually produce a benefit for the entire you know a large group of people, not mm-hmm. just a couple thousand or tens of thousands of homes here and there. You know, there's other sources like nuclear, which have obviously been around for a long time, but that brings about a whole host of political and socio-environmental
issues. And potentially negative
issues,
environmental.
Right? Very, yeah. right? And
yeah.
so, but there's alternatives to that as well. You know, there's nuclear fission, which is being looked at a very high level right now. Which
up
is
in Lawrence, Livermore, the lab up there, I've saw that they're experimenting with it. There's been some breakthroughs in fusion, actually.
Yeah, and so fusion, Lockheed claims that, you know, has made a press releases that they have like a tabletop size reactor, right?
Yeah.
And
because fusion produces the fuel isn't spent, it's like the sun, it keeps
that's what the sun does
burn yeah. for thousands
yeah.
and millions of years or whatever. Once
right.
you start the reactor,
well, and it wasn't,
burnt.
It was, I mean, you know,
fuses stuff together rather than breaks it apart.
So, some of the people that are listening, you know, this might seem really kind of like out there, but it wasn't that long ago before we thought we could never put a battery in a car.
Sure.
And now they got Priuses in three models or four models,
mm-hmm.
right? It wasn't that long ago when you had to wear a pack with a battery on it for your earpiece. Now it's all built in and could even be embedded. I mean,
right.
I mean, there is a scale down to the size, but the output being larger
yeah.
that is inherent to technology.
So we're running out of time here. We got like probably 5 minutes or so. So is your organization literally created to try and contemplate moving people to another planet?
Not at all.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think Paul was about ready to sign up.
No, I can't.
I'm ready to go.
There are certain aspects of our company that are involved with Department of Energy,
yeah.
Looking at different ways of producing energy more efficiently, because
yeah.
we have a lot of expertise that we use for the Department of Defense space access that can translate into other fields like other governmental agencies like Department of Energy. So that's kind of where, you know, and just my hobby is interstellar propulsion, but I do propulsion work and energy
my
work.
My hobby is interstellar propulsion.
He said that without even a blink.
I collect stamps.
So just
keep that in perspective, right?
The propulsion and energy expertise that we have is actually kind of why I'm here, I think, to help identify ways that we could leave the planet, and that it's, you know, there are people that are doing that work now, looking at those things and getting some very interesting results of new engines, new energy systems that in the future.
What about all these scramjets and the DARPA's playing with? And I read that they had one that they've launched a couple off the coast of California, somewhere out in the Pacific, and it sustained it for, I don't know, 20 seconds until it crashed or something.
Yeah, that's a whole other soapbox for me to get on. I can talk with you about that offline, but so there's a whole host of different technologies that people are looking at that are pretty fascinating right now. And things like warp drives, gravity drives, antimatter, that's all science fact now. It's not science fiction like it used to be.
Say that again, Greg, because I think it's very important for people to understand.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, I grew up with Star Trek, as I'm sure most of your audience did, and that was the impetus for a lot of physicists to really get into that field and really hunker down to find out what is actually possible in physics. What do we know and what don't we know? And what we've learned is that things like that, you know, warp drive, gravity manipulation, all that is very strongly leaning towards becoming a science fact and not science fiction.
But you need the energy efficiency.
You need the energy
in order to facilitate that kind of innovation.
That's correct.
Because it takes so much energy to bend space or warp.
And that's what a lot of space, right? You know, and this is all where, you know, physicists get in a room and they put on the brass knuckles and they do the whole Thunderdome cage match of what theory they think is right to represent nature. And it all comes down to a whole set of equations that they can, you know, they can argue about what variables mean this and how to interpret other ones, and what books, you know, of classical thinking have said, no, you can't do this, and yes, you can. So they're still in that realm right now of trying to figure out what avenue is the right way to go down, as far as, even like you said, the energy requirements. Some people say, oh, you need a neutron star size of stuff to do this. Other people say, no, you only need a few kilograms or a few pounds. So there's a whole dichotomy of there's a huge range and spectrum of what we think is capable right now.
So we know it's possible, but we can't imagine producing that much energy at this point in time.
Right. It's mathematically possible, and there's a very big difference. Mathematically possible versus really possible.
Really possible.
Right. And that's kind of where all these lies, the mathematical possibility of becoming science fact.
I don't want to call it theoretical, but the theory is important because, as we talked a minute ago, when you have something you can look forward to as a positive outcome of action that you're being asked to do, you're more likely to do that action. Mm-hmm. So the fact that this is not science fiction is actually science fact potential.
Yes.
With enough there to basically take it to the next level is super important. And that makes me say, okay, I will be sustainable with my energy. I will be, you know, efficient with the resources, because it frees up resources and energy buildup that could basically be utilized for the benefit of future generations, going back to that definition of sustainability.
So does the sudden discovery of fracking, which allows us to draw out oil we thought we would never be able to access out of tar sands and other sorts of things, does that put this off further? Do we go back to, oh, we got plenty of oil, let's put that stuff off to another day here? Or do we stay on the sustainability path? Because that's been the environmental argument against the pipeline, what's the name of the pipeline that goes?
The Alaska pipeline?
No, the one that goes through the country that they're trying to get.
Keystone
Pipeline, yes.
Yeah, Excel, yeah.
And that it will take tar sands, which are filled with more bad stuff, I guess, when they burn, they're more polluting, but it'll make it so cheap and easy to stay on this oil diet and this internal combustion engine that we won't have an incentive anymore to switch to anything else.
Well, coming from Western Pennsylvania, where fracking is huge right now.
Yes.
The impacts that I know, I mean, granted, it is creating literally thousands of jobs in towns that have been, you know, even in Western Pennsylvania, where it was very rich in coal and shale.
Right.
You know, my hometown was, you know, the town part was actually boarded up, you know, a lot of buildings for lease with boards. And now they're taking the boards off, they're opening new businesses, they're turning it into a, you know, really neat metro areas because of the fracking company. So it's a very tough socioeconomical thing.
Where do you draw the line?
You know, there's all this booming into the town.
Absolutely.
However, now we have earthquakes where we've never had them before.
Yeah, right.
Not saying my hometown does, but there's, you know,
well, because you're
like that all the time.
You're asking me to be focused on 50 years from now.
Yeah.
But that means that my, my business is back in operation and I can put my kids through school right now. So it is
same thing that the developing countries say. Yeah, I can be sustainable for the future, but right now I got starving people here.
Right.
I've got boarded up towns in the Dakotas and in western Pennsylvania.
So, I want to turn it back to Robert. And Robert, for those who are interested in pursuing a path of sustainable jobs, okay, give us we've got a couple of minutes. Give us some possible inroads. What can people do?
Well, yeah, I would look at the solar energy industry right now. It's on fire. Just a few years ago, it was less than 100,000 employees, and now it's up to, I think, 174,000, and it's projected to increase by another 20,000 in about a year. So that particular industry is really on fire. A lot of the job growth is in the residential area of the solar energy industry. But it's not just guys on roofs. It's also people in sales and finance and design and project management. So I'd definitely take a look at that. I'd look at the water, keep an eye on the water utility industry, particularly here in California, with some of the mandates that the state is putting in place. I think that's going to drive those kind of policy drivers are going to result in some new job growth in that sector,
water efficiency. Here in Orange County, we have the projected Poseidon project that they're trying to build over in Huntington Beach, just as they are trying to build one down in San Diego, which would be desalinization to give us one other source here. So you're saying water is another big future.
Yeah. Well, it was like, $4 billion worth of green lighting for that one in Carlsbad?
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's supposed to support not only that North San Diego County, but all the way down San Diego.
Right.
I mean, and there's a lot of the controversy on this saline discharge into the ocean and what have you.
Right.
Because
they're sucking the salt out.
Let's say that I'm in a position where I've spent the last 10 years or whatever following a certain career path, and I want to pursue this kind of a path. Where do I go? How do I get started?
To another planet.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think you want to consider going to a green college. I mean, you want to have a career that will enable you to take action in a way that appeals to you and your interests. So you want to take a look at green colleges and universities. UC Irvine is an example of one of those. Cal Poly Pomona is another. UC Santa Barbara, UC Davis, Stanford. You know, you want to really take a look at those institutions because they're the ones that are providing the kinds of program or educational programming that are going to enable you to be a leader in the future as it relates to sustainability.
We got to wrap up here. We're right at the clock here. How does everybody reach the both of you here?
Well,
if they want to learn more about it. We only scratch the surface on this one, literally.
Sure. For me, you can see Green Century at www.greencentury.tv, and you can send an email to info@etherworksllc.com. And I can also be reached if you go to my Etherworks Media website, which is www.etherworksmedia.com.
Thanks for the aerospace company,
and Greg.
For any questions on this, I would probably just refer to my personal email.
Please, if you're comfortable giving it.
It's kind of long, but
go ahead.
Yeah, it's OrionStar2209. So all one word, all lowercase. Orion, like the constellation, the word star, and then 2209 at yahoo.com.
Thank you both, Greg and Robert, for joining us today. It was a really fascinating conversation. True, Paul, we've just scratched the surface on this planet, on this discussion. And I hope everybody enjoyed it as much as we did here. And we look forward to having you join us again next week for an interesting conversation with our guests then. This is The Rad Life, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.